Let's go in-depth on Hawkeye sports with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Hawk Central on 1460 KXNO.
Good evening and welcome to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM in conjunction with the Des Moines Register. Your Iowa Hawkeye football team is on a bye this week, and so is Chad Lystico, so he has called me in from the bullpen. I'm mixing my sports metaphors here, but that's okay. Andrew Downs here with you tonight, and I am not alone. Joined, as always, here on Hawk Central by Kennington Smith from the Des Moines Register. Kennington, thank you so much for the time. Welcome to your show.
Thank you so much. I'm flattered that you say it's my show. I guess that means that I'm starting to carve out a place for myself up here. But thank you so much for joining me in Chad's place, and we hope that Chad is enjoying his well-deserved vacation as well.
Yeah, you know, Kennington, before we get into all this stuff, and, you know, I think like all Hawkeye fans, I'm going to put as much time as I can before we have to actually start talking about that Purdue game. But before we get into that, you and I haven't really sat down and spoken since really the start of the season. And since you got a couple of games inside Kinnick Stadium, since you got to cover, you know, a team that you know, jumped up in the rankings so quickly. And even now, as we sit here disappointed after that loss, still an 11th ranked team, all of that stuff. How has it been so far, your first, I guess, first half of your first football season covering a Big Ten team, covering a team in Iowa City at Kinnick Stadium? Just to like an overview, how is everything going for you?
It's been going well. It's like a whirlwind. I feel like early in the year, Kirk Ferentz says something along the lines of the season takes, you know, years to get here, and then when it's here, it just goes by rapidly. And that's kind of what I've been experiencing. Like, I feel like it was like such a long build up to the season, and then I blink and we're 7 games in and we're more than halfway through the slate. So it's just been going by so fast. It's been a whirlwind, but it's been really fun to cover the team, to have this meteoric rise and to have Iowa really at the center of the college football universe a few times this year. We think about the Iowa State game, we think about the Penn State game, and now they're a nationally ranked team in contention for a Big Ten championship appearance, for a New Year's Six Bowl. It's really exciting getting a chance to kind of dive into the Big Ten, which I didn't have a lot of experience with even watching before I moved up here, and starting to learn the play styles of other teams and the cultures of other teams and what exactly it means up here compared to where I'm from, interacting with the fans who have been great, who have showed me great hospitality from the time that I've moved here to now. So I honestly couldn't have envisioned a smoother transition and a better season to cover, to be honest.
Well, you're doing a great job. I've loved all of your coverage at the Des Moines Register. People should subscribe to that. Check that out if they haven't already. And last thing before we get to that Purdue game, you know, Kinnick Stadium, it's not as big as some of the big stadiums, especially where you're from in the SEC, or kind of, you know, where your fandom lies. So I don't expect it to quite measure up to, you know, a big SEC game in Georgia or something like that. But you got to see one of the great atmospheres in Kinnick Stadium just over a week ago when Penn State came to town. You know, there's been all the stories and all the talk about how that crowd really impacted that game. What was it like to be inside Kinnick for one of those days where it was just it had everything going for it?
Yeah, the energy in the stadium that day was so thick. It was like really hard to describe. The lead up to the game was one thing, and you were almost wondering if the hype was going to live up to what it had been built up to. And then you're walking around outside the stadium on game day, and you're starting to feel a little bit of an electricity. And then you're going inside the stadium, you're seeing the stadium fill up really fast. You just see the crowd was just roaring the entire day, start to finish, during warm-ups, when recruits were on the field, to when, you know, to back in black, to the kickoff. It was just the stadium was almost like shaking in a way, and it was so loud in there. Like you said, it's not as big in size as maybe, like, let's say Sanford Stadium at Georgia. But if you go back to that Georgia-Arkansas game, Arkansas, they had false starts before they could even get their first playoff. And then you look at Penn State, they had 7 false starts. A lot of their mistakes came off of just being pinned back and deep into the territory and the fans making an impact on the game. So there are some parallels in that regard. And, you know, Spencer Petras said it after the game. Nico Reganey, Logan Lee, a few other people said that was the loudest that they had ever heard the stadium. And it was just incredible to be a part of that. And then to see the crowd rush the field, which I've never seen in person before, was really just like a special moment for me. And I'm sure it was special for everybody in attendance as well.
Very, very cool. I'm glad you got to experience that. And hopefully not the last, big game, big atmosphere, crowd, rushing the field experience you get at Kinnick Stadium. Well, from a great atmosphere a week and a half ago to a team that came in and really quieted that Kinnick crowd in Purdue on Saturday, Iowa, a 24-7 loss to Purdue on homecoming. Just a really deflating loss in a lot of ways, Kennington. There's still a lot out there for the Hawkeyes. All of the Big Ten stuff is still available. Really, if you're the most optimistic Iowa fan, a college football playoff is still possible. But a lot of the issues were really kind of brought into light. Some of the things we've talked about all season, that if this doesn't happen, can this happen, came to the forefront on Saturday afternoon with Purdue. Before we dive into it specifically, there's clearly a lot of issues stemming from Saturday. What was kind of the most glaring issue that you saw in that loss to Purdue?
For me, I think that the biggest thing was the early season the early season question marks that we had about this team reared its ugly head against Purdue. Coming into the year, I think the two biggest issues were the depth on both sides of the line of scrimmage, with the defensive line replacing NFL guys, offensive line replacing NFL guys. We knew we were going to play a lot of young guys on the offensive line. And for the most part, they have been able to patch those things up, and they've been able to get to a 6-0 start. At the beginning of the year, the defensive line was honestly a huge surprise and a really positive story amongst the team about how well that they had played early on. And it was almost kind of surprising, especially after that 7-sack game against Kent State, I believe it was. And the last few weeks, we've kind of seen that group kind of regress back to the mean. You could say they didn't have any sacks as a unit against Purdue. I believe they only had one sack against Penn State. They didn't have any sacks the week before against Maryland, which they didn't need to have any sacks against Maryland. But just, one sack as a unit in three games is kind of regressing back. Offensive line has been a work in progress all year, but they've been able to have good moments and good spurts that have helped propel the team to a 6-0 start. But against Purdue, I mean, going up against guys like Carl Aftis on Purdue, he's just a game wrecker. You could see it very early on that was going to be a difficult matchup. And that was really what turned the game from the offensive perspective. From my point of view, is that they really just couldn't get anything going because the Purdue defensive line was just kind of wrecking their game plan. So for me, that's kind of where the game went wrong, was just, both sides of the line of scrimmage. We knew that was question marks coming into the year. Like you said, we were kind of, waiting for a game where maybe those units would be tested a little bit more, and that happened. And, Iowa took a loss, but coming into the bye week, it almost kind of happened at a perfect time. You have 2 weeks to kind of recalibrate, to reassess where you're at, to correct some mistakes, to get some guys some more reps, maybe to develop some depth. And coming out of it against Wisconsin is going to be a huge game. But for me, that's kind of, the big takeaway that I had regarding that.
Yeah, the offensive line, I think, and it's so interesting, Kennington, because you're so new to all of this, and us as fans and media members, especially with Kirk Ferentz this being his 23rd season, we've all kind of come to expect some of these things and have so much of this kind of bias ingrained in us. And a thing like the offensive line, I think, is a great example of that, where year in and year out, even if there are questions in the preseason and in the non-conference games about the offensive line, I think Iowa fans have just conditioned themselves to expect that by midway through the season, not only will that have come together and figured out a way to be a good offensive line, but it will become a strength of this team and allow the running game to get going, allow the quarterback to have a little bit more time, and all of the things that come with a good offensive line play. And that just hasn't happened yet this year. And part of that is how, injuries, for sure. Part of it is, switching guys in and out. They really haven't been able to find that core group of five, or really four, to build around Tyler Linderbaum, because that's the one kind of solid place you have right now. And I think that's a real worry for Hawkeye fans right now, and something that you hope kind of beyond hope at this point that somehow they get something figured out during this bye week or beyond, and they find a way to get this offensive line to gel. Because without that, Kennington, it feels like this offense really has no bread and butter, right? It feels like it has no go-to thing. And in years past, it's been the running game. And if that hasn't been going, it's been tight end play and getting those guys a lot of catches. We feel like we've got good skill players on the edges, especially with some of those freshmen, but unable to get them the ball because you're unable to get Spencer Petras enough time to kind of survey the field and make his reads and do that. So I think you're 100% right with that line thing, and I think that then continues on to this offense really needs to find kind of a go-to, not play, but scheme or, you know, set of plays or even like part of the game, you know, running or passing or tight ends or, you know, short passes, whatever it is. This offense needs to find its go-to thing so that when you're in a situation and you need 4 yards for a third, you know, on a third down to extend the drive, or you just need to quiet the crowd down and get a first down, something like that. It just feels like this offense doesn't have their go-to thing yet. And 7 games in, that's a big worry.
Yeah, I think that it's kind of shown up in spurts. And one thing about the offense, that another thing that didn't happen in the Purdue game that's happened in the 6 games prior, is Iowa actually leads the nation in terms of field position. And they have started more drives in opponent territory. 25% of their drives have started in opponent territory, which is actually a pretty incredible rate when you think about it compared to where other teams in the country rank in that regard percentage-wise. So they've been very fortunate to have players like Charlie Jones setting them up on returns. They've been very fortunate to have a defense that has forced as many turnovers as they have. And when you get put on that short field, it's almost like, okay, what string of plays can we put together in this possession to put some points on the board? Or, you know, if we're 30 yards in, we know we have, you know, these handful of plays that can at least get us a field goal, or at least in that Maryland game, especially a lot of the times they were set up almost in near goal-to-goal situations. So, you know, one play here, quick play touchdown. There really hasn't been a time this year where they have consistently been put on their 20, on their 25, and have had to put together long, consistent drives were kind of like that bread and butter. What you're talking about kind of comes to light. And that Purdue game was a game like that. I believe they only had 8 possessions in the game. 7 of them started on their side of the field. I believe almost all of them started at the 20, the 25, but we just didn't see that offense move the ball down the field when they weren't set up with great field position. And I think we all kind of knew that there was going to be a game like that where the defense wasn't going to get 3 or 4 turnovers a game, and it was going to kind of be on the offense to kind of create their own juice and create their own momentum and move the ball down the field that way. So again, the Purdue game was almost kind of like a worst-case scenario. Everything that could have gone wrong in a game did go wrong, and we kind of saw the results of that. So, you know, hopefully during the bye weekend, we have offensive coordinator Brian Fraser. We have all the coordinators today for media availability, so it'll be a good opportunity for us to kind of pick their brains about what's been going on during the bye week, how they assess the first 7 games of the season, and maybe they might be seeing things offensively that we don't see, or maybe they might be looking at things from different lens than we do. So that'll be interesting, but you know, hopefully coming out of the bye week, there's more of a cohesive game plan, and for me personally, I feel like it has to center around Tyler Goodson.
This is Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO, 106.3 FM. I'm Andrew Downs. He's Kennington Smith from the Des Moines Register. And Kennington, you're right. It was almost a perfect storm of things going wrong for Iowa on Saturday against Purdue. And that wasn't just limited to the offensive side or the special teams. The defense was unable to get off the field on third down and unable to stop David Bell for a third straight game. I know that's such a frustrating thing for fans. And again, you know, one of these things where fans have been harping on this for years now, with Kirk Ferentz and Phil Parker teams, and you know, we love Phil Parker. He's a great defensive coordinator, all of that, but it seems like they are unable or unwilling to adjust to things during the game at times. And so you know more football than I do, Kennington, so I'm just going to ask you this kind of as a fan and what I've seen on social media. You know, there's a lot of questions about, why don't you change something to try and stop David Bell? Why don't you double team him? Why don't you do, you know, and it's one of those where even if somebody else ends up killing us because we do that. At least you're stopping that one thing that going into that game, we all knew he was the threat. And then during the game, he is the threat. And it just continues. It becomes a frustrating thing. And obviously, it's not as simple as, hey, do something slightly different and change the game completely. Phil Parker knows more football than I will ever know. But it does seem like the fan base is wondering, why don't you make adjustments during the game to try and stop that from David Bell and Purdue?
Right. And it's actually kind of ironic that you said that, because coming into the week, the players on the defense are saying we have a different game plan for David Bell and just the Purdue offense in general. And then even after the game, I believe it was Jack Kerner who said, we came into the game and our plan was, if not outright double team David Bell, we were going to on every play at least have another player in the vicinity of him. And more times than not, he was caught in one-on-one coverage. And I think that is just a credit to Brom and his just kind of ability to out-scheme this Iowa defense. I think that when we're looking at Phil Parker and Kirk Ferentz, just the system as a whole, I think that there is something in what you said, that there is just kind of a loyalty to staying the course and sticking to the system, because 90% of the time, and it works. Purdue is a really bad matchup for Iowa, and there wasn't a lot of in-game adjustments to manage David Bell. Riley Moss wasn't available. We all know that. I feel like Terry Roberts did a good job in his place. He was tested some. He really didn't give up too many big plays in his regard. So I think that there is, some fairness to what you're saying about why weren't there any adjustments made. I just think that overall, though, even outside of David Bell, the fact that Aiden O'Connell, Purdue's quarterback, didn't have much pressure, the fact that they weren't able to stop the quarterback draws and the quarterback runs, and it was able to kind of keep the defense on their heels, it was kind of an all-around poor performance on the defense's part. You would have liked to see them make adjustments. Maybe they did try to make some adjustments and do things that we didn't see with the naked eye, and Brom was able to out-scheme that as well. They were coming off a bye. They had a lot of time to prepare, and they were able to add some wrinkles into the offense that maybe Iowa's defense wasn't prepared for. So I don't know if moving forward, if we'll see anything different from Iowa's defense. I'm not sure, and maybe you could speak to this when we're talking about the teams ahead of their schedule, if there's anything offensively that will be able to challenge Iowa in the same way that Purdue's offense had. But I do think that there is, something and some merit to the frustrations of non-adjustments. But also, Purdue is just a really bad matchup. I know that that's not a popular answer and things that people want to hear, because that almost sounds like you chalk Purdue up as an L almost every year, because it's been 4 out of the last 5 years for them. But sometimes, you can do everything right and you can have the secondary that they have, and then you just run into a bad matchup, and that's just not going to be your day.
Yeah, it's funny because you're right. It's kind of it feels almost like a cop-out to say, well, Purdue just has their number, Brom just game plans well against Iowa. But there comes a point where that just has to be the case, right? I mean, 4 out of 5, like you said, and in each of those games, it feels like Iowa has had the talent to go in and win that game. It feels like I haven't looked at the betting lines from the last 5 years, but I would guess that Iowa has been favored in at least 4 of those 5 games, if not all 5 of those games. And some of those games haven't been close, like Saturday. Now, the David Bell, there's an extent to which you just have to kind of tip your cap, right? I mean, that's a guy who has done this consistently with different quarterbacks and different offenses in different locations against this Hawkeye team. And Iowa has been able to shut down players like him before, even this season. I mean, Indiana's not what maybe not what we thought they were in the first game, but Ty Freifogel's a really good wide receiver. Jahan Dotson's a fantastic wide receiver, and Iowa was able to effectively shut those guys down. Freifogel had a couple of big plays, but they were held to field goals on those drives. Dotson the same way. And so it comes to a point where if you can stop everybody else and you can't stop this, it does become just a scheme thing, a game plan thing, a bad matchup thing. And while it's frustrating to now look forward and at every schedule that Iowa has Purdue, you know, next year, no matter what's happening with either of these programs, when they meet, Hawkeye fans are going to be, you know, grabbing for the nut cups, worried about this game, and rightfully so, regardless of whether or not David Bell is still there. And so when you ask, as I look ahead at the rest of the schedule, there's just no other team that plays Iowa the way Purdue does. And so, and then Iowa, you know, for whatever reason, and I'm not going to start knocking it because I like winning 75 to 80% of the games Iowa plays. I enjoy that. But Iowa does what it does. You hear opposing coaches and players say this almost every week. Iowa does what it does. And if you can beat them at that, you can win. And if you can't, you can't. And Purdue can. And so I'm not worried about, I shouldn't say I'm not worried about any of the next five games, and we're going to talk about those here in just a second, but I'm less worried about somebody just going off like that or a team just kind of outclassing Iowa the way Purdue did, just because it is, as unsatisfactory of an answer as this might be, it does come down to a scheme thing and a game plan thing, and maybe that's just Purdue and Jeff Brohm have Iowa and Kirk Ferentz's number a little bit. Kennington, when you were talking to the players and the coaches after that game, did you get the feeling that there was an emotional hangover from the Penn State game? I know that's a popular thing, but having never played at this level, it's really hard for me to gauge if that's a real thing or if that's a talking point that we as fans and media members try to come up with to explain things we don't understand. Did you get a feeling that there was, you know, an emotional hangover from that game, that there was maybe too much pressure heaped on this team where all of a sudden you've gotten through your biggest tests and you've got six games to go and everybody expects you to go 12-0 and everybody expects you to go to the Big Ten championship game, and maybe people start expecting you to live up to that number two ranking and play for a national championship? Did you get the feeling? I'm sure nobody out and out said, yeah, we were hungover and, you know, the pressure got to us. But do you get the feeling that that played any role in this loss to Purdue?
I think it had something to do with it. And Kirk Ferentz spoke to this a little bit in the presser, that he said, you know, just he said that was a concern of his. And I'm not sure if it was so much living up to the pressure of being number two as it was that game against Penn State just took everything out of them. It literally took everything that team had physically, mentally, emotionally to get through that game. And then you have to get back up again for the next game, you know, immediately afterwards. And these are our kids at the end of the day. These are, you know, 18 to 22, 23-year-olds, and they're human. And to go through a game like that and have to, you know, kind of pick yourself back up after a physical game, the recovery was something that was a major talking point throughout the week, physically, mentally, emotionally, all of these things put together. It was, you know, just kind of tough to kind of recreate that same energy again. And another thing about it is you're able to kind of create some momentum on the first drive. You get that long play to Keegan Johnson. I believe that position ended in an interception. And it's just kind of like, okay, like, we're coming out. We're going to try to create some more energy. We have this play. It seems like the juice is there. And then everything just kind of turned on its head that fast. And they weren't able to recreate that same energy again the rest of the game. So I do think there was some element to that at play. Obviously, the players aren't using that as an excuse or as a crutch, but I do think it's something to consider that, you know, and Chad also spoke to this throughout the week, that this is something that is kind of commonplace amongst Ferentz coach teams, that they have, you know, huge top five wins in the next week. You know, something seems to happen to where the team doesn't play to that same standard. And I think that, you know, emotional letdowns are just kind of part of the game. And Kirk Ferentz said this as well. This is why so few teams go undefeated, because it is hard to win a big game, get your team back up again, and win the next week and string those wins together. If it was easy to do those things, every year, everybody would be 12-0, like in Alabama, who he used as this example. He said, you know, we're not Alabama, but just using them as an example. You know, there's a reason why they're able to do that, and not many people aren't, because, you know, it truly takes an elite team and, you know, elite focus and just an all-around effort to kind of pick yourself up and be able to kind of be consistent and generate that same energy week by week.
You know, Kennington, you talk about that, and you alluded to this a little earlier in the program, but I would go a little more in-depth here. Do you think, and it seems like you do, and I tend to agree with you. Now, maybe I would have preferred to have the bye this last week after that Penn State game where you can kind of stop, take a breath, take it all in, and then look ahead to the last six games of the schedule. But, you know, short of that, I think this is a pretty good spot for Iowa to have a bye coming off of that loss and looking at five straight, kind of, you know, important. I mean, not kind of important, very important, but rivalry games really in the Big Ten West here. Is this a good time for the Hawkeyes to get this break?
Yeah, definitely. And now this is kind of where the reflection, the recovery, all of those things can kind of come into play. You would have hoped or wished that you could carry the momentum of being 7-0 into a bye week, but the fact that they had this loss, and it kind of left a bad taste in their mouth. I believe Jack Kerner said that you know, we're going to have this sour taste in our mouth for a while, and usually the 24-hour rule is in effect, and you could have a loss like this, or you could flush it immediately and just look ahead to the next week. And they didn't have that opportunity, you know, this week with the bye. So I think that this loss kind of, you know, they took a punch in the mouth. And great teams, you know, lose games. That's not an indictment on Iowa's team as a whole that they lost, but this is an opportunity for the players to kind of, you know, take a step back and look and say, okay, look at what we did in the first six games, and we were able to, for the most part, dominate all six of those matchups. Penn State obviously was a very close game, but let's look at the six games, what we did well, what worked, why we were 6-0. We're able to look at this one game. Okay, everything that was a question mark or the mistakes that we made or how we got away from our identity, that's the reason why we lost. Let's go into this bye week. Let's take a few days to decompress. Let's take a few days to recover. And then let's get back to work and making sure we put our best foot forward. Because when you're talking about pressure and when you're talking about living up to the hype, we're kind of in a situation now where this Wisconsin game is so huge for so many reasons. We're talking about Big Ten standings. We're talking about divisional matchups. We're talking about ranked games. And another thing to consider, that weekend, Iowa plays Wisconsin. Penn State and Ohio State play that weekend. Michigan and Michigan State play that weekend. Georgia and Florida play that weekend. Why is that significant? Because the Tuesday after that weekend is when the first college football rankings come out. Ooh. There are going to be a lot of moving and shaking depending on what happens the week prior. So if you're 6-1 coming off a bye, going at Wisconsin, even though Wisconsin is in what they have been in past years or what we thought they were going to be this year, that is a huge game for Iowa. And that's going to be a game that the powers that be in the national media are going to pay attention to and see what type of Iowa team shows up. They put on a good performance, strong team performance. When that game moved to 7-1, then we can see Iowa maybe potentially move back into the top 10 and position themselves nicely for the back into the stretch. They lose that game 5-6-2. All of a sudden, you know, lost two games to two unranked teams. All those other marquee matchups were going on. We're going to see maybe Iowa start to move backwards in the national discussion. So that's where kind of I see the true pressure, you know, at for this team. So all things considered, it couldn't have come at a better time that they were able to recalibrate and get their full preparation for what's going to be the biggest game of the year, in my opinion.
Man, you're so right. I think this game, it's always a big game with Wisconsin. It's always a big challenge to go to Madison. And it would have been a big game, even if Iowa is 7-0 and ranked 2 going into this game. It becomes a huge game all of a sudden with that loss because of exactly what you're saying. It's time, like, this is where the rubber meets the road. What is the rest of the season going to be? Are you going to recover from that loss and come back and win the Big Ten West and, you know, achieve all of these things that, you know, a week and a half ago we all thought were possible? Or are you not who we thought you were? Or, you know, in some cases, are you who we thought you were? And it's all going to start to fall apart here. And maybe you were overrated and did get lucky and can't continue to make those turnovers. And there are some really big glaring holes and issues that you're not able to overcome. Because of that, I think you're right. This is the biggest game of the season, and I do think it's the toughest game of those remaining. If I was going to rank these next five games, Kennington, and I'll just kind of get your opinion on these, Wisconsin's certainly number one. I'm still going to put Nebraska at number two because it's a trip to Lincoln, and I think Nebraska is a talented team that has the potential to knock Iowa off. I will say, the way Nebraska is losing games is unsustainable from a max effort and buy-in standpoint. I think that Scott Frost has already had issues with max effort and buy-in and continuing all the way through the season with not much to play for. And if Nebraska loses another game or two, and they certainly will lose another game or two, but if they do it in the fashion that they've been losing games, it feels like they could really mentally fall apart. And by Black Friday, I don't know what this team is going to look like. Now, they could recover and win a couple of big games, and that could become a huge, huge spot for them. But if they're playing for their fourth or fifth win on Black Friday, I just don't see that being a as tough of a game as maybe we think it is right here. Then I'll go Minnesota number three, just because they had that win against Nebraska. They're a really up and down team, but when they play well, they do look pretty good. Northwestern, just because it's Northwestern and that's a road trip and it's always a tough place to play. And then Illinois is just not great. They don't look like the team that beat Nebraska in week one, and I'm less worried about that game than the others. Do you think I have anything wrong here when I rank them from toughest to easiest? Wisconsin, Nebraska, Minnesota, Northwestern, and then Illinois.
Yeah, I feel like that's fair. I was also going to have Nebraska number two for all the reasons that you said, and also just the fact that Iowa has been such a thorn in the side of Nebraska for so long, and they have an opportunity. Let's say best case scenario, Iowa runs the table, they win four in a row, they're 10-1. Going into Lincoln that last game of the season, maybe Nebraska is 5-6 trying to get into a bowl game, and they have an opportunity to maybe ruin Iowa's dream season. Iowa could be 10-1, ranked 5th, 6th in the country, on their way to the Big Ten championship, maybe potentially playing for a playoff spot. And I'm not saying that Iowa is overlooking Nebraska in that scenario, but I feel like the narrative on the national level would be that could be a potential trap game for Iowa. And like you said, with the max all out effort, I feel like that would be almost like a sellout. We're going to give everything we have to try to beat our rival for the first time, I believe, in 6 years and get to a bowl game and kind of win this one for our coach, Scott Frost. So I think that's a major matchup. I think that Nebraska at three Minnesota at three is spot on as well, for kind of the same reasons. They're another team that Iowa has bested in the past years. And Minnesota is kind of on this uptick to where they are quietly contenders in the West, depending on where they'll be at that time. They've won a few games in a row. I believe they only have one Big Ten loss as well, and it was in the East to Ohio State. So potentially they could be a one loss Big Ten team coming into Kinnick on November 13th as well. And that will be a huge matchup. 4 and 5, I agree with you as well. Those should be winnable games, but one game being on the road, and Northwestern has had more recent success. I believe that they have like a slight edge over Illinois. Overall, none of these games are easy. Conference play isn't easy. Kirk Ferentz spoke to this in the postgame presser as well. All of these teams have some type of motive, or there's some type of storyline in place to where that team really, really wants to beat Iowa, on top of the fact that Iowa is an 11th ranked team in the country. And if you're not having the season that you're wanting to have, which pretty much all of these teams are kind of falling in, right, in that boat, you would want nothing more than to have that feather in the cap to say, we beat a top 15 nationally ranked team in our division.
You know, and as Iowa fans, we know what that's like. We've had several seasons where, disappointing, maybe not the right word, but you knock off a top three Penn State team to ruin their chances. You beat a number three Michigan team, number two or number three in 2016. I don't remember. Minnesota came into Kinnick Stadium undefeated a few years ago, and Iowa beat them. Like those, especially in those rivalry games, in those Big Ten West games, that kind of badge on your arm of knocking out a team and ruining their season, maybe even more so than impacting your season. That is a real thing, and I agree. All five of these are tough games, but all five are winnable games for the Hawkeyes, and if they are the team that I thought they were a week ago. And this is the thing we do, Kennington, right? And we do it every year. Expectations change from week to week, but for whatever reason, I'm guilty of this as much as anybody. I see the way Iowa wins those first six games, and I think, well, that's the way they're going to play every week. That's the way they're going to win every game. I mean, I was in Kinnick Stadium on Saturday, and the entire time I'm just waiting for that period of time that we saw in the first quarter against Indiana, the third quarter against Iowa State, the second quarter against Maryland, where Iowa and just turns it around quickly, right? And all of a sudden they get three interceptions in a row and score on all of them and put the game out of reach. That never happened on Saturday, and so now I'm also guilty of looking at Saturday's game and then extrapolating that all to the next five games and saying, well, if they play like that, they're going to lose all five of these games. It's never that easy. It's never that simple, but each of these games is a big game. I do think Iowa has a great opportunity to recover here. You make a statement win at Wisconsin, and you're exactly right. You're right back in the national conversation. You're right back in the top 10, and all of a sudden that Purdue game hurts a little bit less. Kenny, we're halfway through the season here, just over halfway, and when we come back, I want to go through some mid-season awards. Chad Lysico left us this idea, and we're going to take it and run with it. You're listening to Hawk Central. This is 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM, and we're with the Des Moines Register. We'll be right back.
Everything you need to know about the Hawkeyes. It's Hawk Central with the Des Moines Register on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome back to Hawk Central Radio here on 1460 KXNO 106.3 FM and alongside the Des Moines Register. You can find, if you missed any of our first segment, Kennington Smith and I, by the way, I'm Andrew Downs, not Chad Lysico. Chad is on vacation this week, taking a much deserved break. Kennington, when do you get a break, man? If you don't get a break on bye week, when do you get a break?
I honestly have no idea. I'm learning that the beat guys and the columnists, the people who have been here for a while, they kind of understand and know how to set their vacations up. I just kind of came in and it's just like, okay, it's all going to fall on me. I remember when I first moved out here, Chad took like the whole month of July off.
That's
and
right.
I had only been on staff for like a week or so. So he is a veteran in the game. He knows how to set these things up. So I really don't know when my break is, maybe Christmas or so, but it's fine. I need all the work I can get. I need all the reps that I can get. So I'm glad that the work is falling on me. But next year, best believe I'm going to be a little bit more seasoned and kind of know when to pick my spot so I can get some time off as well.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, you're doing a great job and keep up the great work. For those who, again, if you missed any of our first segment, we recapped the Purdue game. We looked ahead at the rest of the schedule. And I know that Chad and Kennington, a week from tonight here on Hawk Central, will break down that Wisconsin matchup in detail. So look for that. But also check out Kennington's work in the Des Moines Register. They talked with coordinators today. I'm sure he's got stuff written up on that. He's got basketball stories. And follow him on Twitter. He's a fun follow on Twitter at @SkinnyKenny_ and so check him out. Kennington, we're at the bye week. We're 7 weeks into a 12-week season, and it's time to do some mid-season awards. We'll just we'll run through some MVPs, some best performances, all of this stuff here in this segment. I think this will be fun. And what I'll also do, I think, is kind of reset things, because like I said in the last segment, especially as a fan, and I'm more of a fan than a media member, my emotions can get the best of me during a football season, and it's easy for me to sit here right now a couple of days after that deflating loss to Purdue and think that everything is bad, right, and everything is falling apart and everything is awful. That's obviously not the case. A week ago, I was more overjoyed about an Iowa football team than I have been in my entire life, and so there's been a lot of good. There were six great wins. There's been a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Let's move away from the bad and remember the good here as we talk about our midseason awards. And I'll start you off with the offensive MVP. Honestly, this was maybe the hardest one for me to come up with. Who is Iowa's offensive MVP through seven games?
Yeah, this was tough, actually, to choose from. I would have to say, for me personally, it would have to be Linderbaum, because when I think about MVP, it's a mix of individual performance and then what would happen to this offense if this player was not on the team. So Linderbaum, obviously, has been the best player overall on offense, and he stabilized that line. But I'm thinking about what the offensive line would look like if Tyler Linderbaum wasn't on the team. And that is kind of the scary part for me. So I read this looking up mock drafts this morning that he's a projected top 10 pick. We knew this. He had a 91.7 overall grade according to Pro Football Focus last year, and this year he even has a higher grade than that. He's at 93 right now, so this is the best offensive lineman in the country, and he is playing at an even higher clip than he was last year when he was one of the best offensive linemen in the country. Everything starts up front with him, communication, blocking scheme, working with Petras, working with the running backs as well. And the leadership aspect to play alongside a true freshman in Connor Colby, to play alongside another freshman in Mason Richmond. You have Justin Britt, who hasn't started before this year, and he's starting to come along. Same with Nick DeYoung. Cody Ansa started some games as well. And then not having senior Kyler Schott in there as well, who broke his foot. Just all of the things that have been happening along the offensive line. The one constant has been Linderbaum. So for that reason, he's my offensive MVP.
Yeah, it's strange to kind of start this podcast by saying, you know, the biggest glaring weakness on this team right now is the offensive line, and then say the offensive MVP is one of the offensive linemen. But I think you're right. I think he's probably the only legitimate answer here in Tyler Linderbaum. I think before the Purdue game, you could have made a case for Spencer Petras, although he wasn't, you know, lighting up the scoreboard or putting up huge stats. He was steadily leading this team forward, winning games, not making big mistakes. Obviously, his leadership on and off the field is a huge factor in why he's QB1 right now. But, you know, and I can forgive three of the four interceptions against Purdue. They were garbage time interceptions, but they still count on the record. They still go on the score sheet. And so I think that game probably knocks him out of MVP contention here 7 weeks in. The other name I would just throw out there is Tyler Goodson. He hasn't had the year that we thought he was going to have, and so he's a victim of kind of hyped and expectations. But I think he's been okay. I think the offensive line has not given him a lot to work with, but what he has been given to work with, he's done a pretty good job of. And I hope that he's able to have kind of a breakout second half of this season here. But all in all, I think you're right with Tyler Linderbaum as the offensive MVP. How about defensive MVP? Who do you got on that side of the ball?
For me, this was really tough. I'm going to have to go. I don't know if it's possible to do co-MVPs.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
If it is possible to do co-MVPs, I would have to go with Jack Campbell and Riley Moss. Jack Campbell, heart and soul of the defense. He has been at the center of nearly every important play for Iowa this year defensively, whether that's the strip fumble, Justin Jacobs, he scoops it up, scores against Iowa State, the hit on Sean Clifford, you know, one of the tip interceptions against Maryland that really got things rolling as well. Riley Moss, highest graded cornerback in the country, you know, pick six machine, interception leader in the country, leader of the back seven, you know, the secondary. Matt Hankins is also in consideration as well. But for me, it probably would come down to those two. But if I had to choose the number one MVP on defense, it would probably have to be Jack Campbell.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you named all the names I would have mentioned there as well. Hankins has been very good. He's been solid. He's a midseason All-American by some services. But, I mean, David Bell ate his lunch on Saturday, so it's hard to ignore that. Riley Moss has done everything you said. And then Jack Campbell, yeah, man, I think he's the guy. So many tackles. But also, I think just he's to be able to help the defensive line in his linebacker position and then also help the secondary, him being that solid in the middle like he is, really, I think, helps both of those other position groups and really solidifies that defense. This could probably go to the entire defense, but if you're picking out one guy, I think you pick the right guy in linebacker Jack Campbell, and you name some of the huge plays that he has made that we'll certainly talk about when we talk about the best plays of the season. But before we get to that, special teams MVP. I think there's one name here that we're both going to go with for special teams MVP halfway through the season.
Punting is winning.
Yes, sir.
Like that. I feel like that's kind of where we leave it. Torrey Taylor, his punts, like, it's not just enough to say that he pins it inside the five. It's what happens after he pins teams inside the five. He pins the team inside the five. The defense gets a three and out. They give it to the offense on the short field. The offense scores. He pins the team inside the five. Offense gets a turnover. Iowa's offense takes the ball over, scores. So that's kind of the chain reaction of having one of the best punters in the country in Torrey Taylor. He is almost an eraser of mistakes for Iowa's offense. He can pin teams deep. He is a weapon. Just as much as anybody else on the team. And I honestly don't know if you didn't have a punter of his caliber, I don't know where Iowa's season would be right now. Maybe they are still 6-1. It might be hard to see that them being 6-1 though, because of where his punts have landed. Iowa State, Penn State are two primary examples, and what's been kind of the chain reaction In addition to that, Caleb Shudak has had a great year as well, and he has been super reliable from the kicker position. But, you know, there's no denying that Torrey Taylor is one of the most valuable players on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Shudak is the other name that you throw in there, too, and he's been so solid. Okay, so those are our MVPs. How about the best game? What was the best game so far this season?
Best game for me, I would have to say it was Iowa State, because that was the game for me that signified that this team was for real. You beat Indiana, and it was kind of one of those games where y'all were on equal footing. It's rankings-wise. It could have gone either way, and Iowa dominates that game. And then you're going into Cy-Hawk, and it was built up as the biggest game in the rivalry's history. Iowa State had the highest ranking in school history. This was going to be their opportunity to take that step forward on national stage. The center of the college football universe was in Iowa that weekend, college game day, all of the factors around it, and Iowa went in there and not only won the game, but as I believe it was Holly Rowe who interviewed Kirk Ferentz after the game, and she asked him, you know, what does it mean to you to be able to say that the Hawkeyes are still here? And Ferentz, you know, he took a step back and he was like, you know, like, yeah, you're right. Like, we are still here. And that was kind of the first time in the season that we were able to see kind of the emotional side of Kirk Ferentz. And that was kind of the win for me that set this team on the path that they're on right now. So obviously Penn State game, huge. But Iowa State game is the one that kind of got all of that momentum rolling for me.
Again, you and I are right on the same page. I think you're exactly right. You have to mention the Penn State game, but that Iowa State game and the dominant fashion in which Iowa won it was such a huge game. To win on the road, to beat Iowa State again, to win a top 10 game on the road like that. And now Iowa State looks like a pretty good team, and hopefully if they keep winning, that win just looks better and better on Iowa's resume. The best play, and I want to break this up into the three categories as well. So what was the best offensive play of the season?
Best offensive play of the season would have to be, for me, probably the game-winning play against Penn State.
Yeah.
For the magnitude of when it happened, and then the play call for all the flack that Brian Ferentz has gotten this year, and it's been deserved in some regard. That was a perfectly executed play, and that was a perfectly timed play call for that situation. That was probably the only moment in the entire game where an offensive receiver was open. Peters hit him on the money, they scored. So for me, that's the best play.
Yeah, I think for sure that the other one I'll give kind of a mention to, that Goodson catch and run, the long touchdown early in the third quarter against Maryland. I didn't think Maryland was going to come back and win that game in the second half, but that really put it away. And that play and the move he made and the speed he showed just shows what kind of a player he is, and that was a great play. But yeah, Petras to Reganey, we still haven't really named that play yet, and I think that has to happen at some point, you know, like Tate to Holloway or something like that, because that game, especially if Iowa, that play rather, especially if Iowa lives up to some expectations here, will go down in Hawkeye lore. Defensively, what was the best play of the season so far?
Best play, and I mentioned this earlier, for me, again, the magnitude of when it happened, what it meant for that game, and overall execution, I'm going to go with Justin Jacobs, strip fumble, yep. Jack Campbell scoops it up, scores against Iowa State. That was the play that kind of put Iowa ahead momentum-wise. And then you had, it was like a three-layered type of play. You had the defensive line setting the edge, which forced Breece Hall to move to the outside. Then you had just Jacobs in perfect position. He strips him. Jack Campbell scoops it up right behind him, scores. So that was like a three-prong, everybody on defense doing their job, being in the right position to make a play and executing on that, which is kind of the mantra of Iowa's defense, is being prepared, being in the right space, right place at the right time, and capitalizing off of that. And that was, you know, the perfect personification of that play. And take a bow, Justin Jacobs and Jack Campbell, for the best defensive play.
Absolutely. And I mean, to make that play on a guy like Breece Hall, who is as good as an All-American running back, and for a young guy like Justin Jacobs, that wasn't a fluke play. He forced that fumble. Campbell was in the right spot, and they capitalized on it. What it did for that game, the way it was set up by the Torrey Taylor punt, all of that stuff was fantastic. I agree with you completely. Again, the only other one I would maybe mention, the Riley Moss, the second pick six against Indiana, maybe not the biggest play, but just a fun play, really kind of set that game off, set Moss up to have this nationally relevant season, and was a lot of fun. Really kind of showed what this defense was going to be able to do. All right, special teams, what's been the biggest play so far?
Biggest play, I would have to say, I don't know if I can think of one Tory Taylor punt off the top of my head.
I think it's just a
signifying moment. There have just been so many
that have
60 plus yards pinned inside the five. There's a lot against Iowa State. I think he had like a 66, 64 yarder against Iowa State. That one comes to mind. The one where he pinned Penn State deep the first time and Clifford throws that interception are ones that come to mind as well. So, any of Tory Taylor's punts inside the 3 yard line would probably be that for me. Shudak has hit it some 50 yarders as well. So those will be up there for me as well. It's really hard to pick one. I feel like all of them have been super significant in their own right.
Yeah, I think Shudak's kick, his final field goal against Penn State, in that wind, in that moment, with that pressure, I think that's up there as well. But you're right. Some of those Tory Taylor punts are just things of beauty. Newcomer of the year. We've seen a lot of true freshmen play, more than almost ever under Kirk Ferentz. Who's the newcomer of the year for the Hawkeyes so far?
Newcomer of the year. For choosing a freshman, then I would have to say probably Mason Richmond at the left tackle spot coming in and starting, which is not an easy position. First of all, left tackle, that's the money position. And then to be a freshman in that regard and starting. And he's a freshman midseason All-American right now, according to some services from what I've seen. So freshman newcomer of the year, I would choose Mason Richmond. Newcomer of the year of somebody who is stepping into a prominent role for the first time is Jeffin Jacobs for me. He's somebody who, coming into the year, we projected him to be kind of like a gadget player, maybe somebody to be used in passing situations and just kind of an uber athlete. And he is quickly becoming somebody who is just too good to take off of the field. And he is somebody who is quickly rising up draft boards, which I don't know that we expected to happen, this quickly to be a redshirt sophomore, and he's appearing in Pro Football Focus top 100 draftable players. So his meteoric rise has really been something special. So kind of broke up the newcomer into two categories, a freshman and somebody stepping into a role for the first time. But I feel like those two have really taken leaps forward in helping this team.
Yeah, I like that. The other name I'd mention is Keegan Johnson. I think by the end of the year, he will have had a bigger impact on this season than he has so far. But we've already seen some of the talent there, the speed, the strength, the route running capabilities. He could really be a game breaker for this team. Best team performance here halfway through the season, Kennington.
100% the Maryland game.
Yep, absolutely.
That was all around, all three phases of the game, about as perfect of a performance as you can have, especially considering short week on the road, national television, night game. Maryland has all the momentum in the world. They had a Heisman candidate at that time in Talia Tagovailoa. That was supposed to be, again, another game where the other team that Iowa was playing was supposed to make their statement, win against Iowa and take that step forward. And Iowa goes into their house and just stifles it. I mean, seven turnovers, six of them turned into scores. They did it in all different types of ways. Teachers had an unbelievable game. The Goodson run, what you're talking about, happened in that game as well. So hard to think of a better team performance than in that one where all three phases of the game were just clicking the way that they were.
All right, let's wrap it up with this. The best individual performance through seven games for the Hawkeyes.
Offensively, Tyler Goodson against Kent State, career high, 153, three touchdowns. Defensively, Riley Moss, two pick sixes against Indiana.
I love it. I think Jack Campbell's 18 tackles against Colorado State, probably worth a mention there as well. But I agree with you. Kennington, man, I had so much fun talking football with you. I wanted to get to some basketball stuff, some other. I mean, we got a top 10 women's basketball program. You've done stories on basketball already. But I lost track of time, man. We ran out of time. So I'm sorry about that. Hopefully Chad will go on vacation again soon and you and I can do this again, because I've had a really, really good time talking Hawkeye football with you today, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And just for my last words, kind of what you said earlier about where Iowa is, and obviously it was a souring loss against Purdue. Just to keep everything into perspective, at the beginning of this year, with the opponents that were on the schedule and everything that this season was supposed to be. If somebody would have told you going into the bye week that you'd be 6-1 and the 11th ranked team in the country, you probably would have taken it. So obviously it didn't happen the way that fans wanted. And going into the bye week, it wasn't the type of performance that people were expecting. But at the end of the day, 11th ranked team in the country at the center of college football conversation, everything that fans and the team want, Big Ten West Championship, Big Ten Championship game appearance, potentially the college football playoff, if not the playoff, a New Year's Six Bowl, the Rose Bowl, all of these things are in play and firmly within Iowa's grasp. So Purdue game didn't go the way that you wanted, but the sky is not falling by any means right now.
I love it, man. Thank you so much. If you catch up with Kennington, again, on Twitter, @SkinnyKenny_, follow him at the Des Moines Register, DesMoinesRegister.com, and all the work they do at HawkCentral.com. If you miss any of this show, find it on the podcast page. Just search wherever you get your podcast, search Hawk Central, and subscribe to the Register, because Chad and Kennington do some really cool stuff, some great subscriber-only podcasts, all of that kind of stuff, and support local media. This has been Hawk Central. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.